I'm Gab, he's Jules. Blue skies over West London. In fact, it's quite warm and summery, really, isn't it, Jules? Yeah. We have a full show because there's so much going on. Obviously, the transfer window getting into full swing. We got more facts on Darwin Nunez, Christian Eriksen linked to Manchester United. The Nations League fallout. We can discuss who stinks more, Italy, England, or France.
Yeah, that's right.
It's fair enough. But I want to start at the top of the show with something else. It's something. It's a piece I wrote a while back, which did generate quite a bit of buzz because people love arguing about this. But we're in the age of the really big transfer. Like people want 100 million, 150 million, whatever. And I went back and I looked at the top 10 transfers by transfer price at each position. So goalkeeper, defender, midfielder, forward. And I asked myself, on a scale of 1 to 5, how likely would you be, knowing what you know now, knowing how it turned out, how likely would you be to repeat the deal? With, you know, 1 means absolutely not, never. 5, man, this guy far surpassed expectations. And 3 means, yeah, it was a really good deal. I'm doing this again.
Yeah.
What I found, and I want to get your view on this, and you've got the ratings in front of you, you can debate this. Some of them did cause some debate, I think mostly from people who don't quite understand the criteria. But what I found is that actually generally, goalkeepers and defenders, even when they're really expensive, fewer really bad deals. Midfielders, and especially forwards, all over the shop.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I concluded reading your quite fascinating article. I agree with most of the grades. I mean, there's a few that you can always debate on. I think you were harsh on Gareth Bale.
I knew that was coming. We're going to discuss that later.
Of course, you knew that was coming. Do you think... So there's the other big thing, which we know that pretty much all the deals over 100 million euros have been very difficult for those players to justify in a way the price tag, and for them to do well in those clubs, apart from Cristiano, I guess, that you can count almost twice the move from United to Real Madrid and then Real Madrid to Juventus. But, you know, of course, the likes of Paul Pogba and Joao Felix and Neymar and plenty of others, Ousmane Dembele, Coutinho, over the 100 million, it's a struggle. I don't know if it's too heavy to carry, maybe.
I think there's an element of risk that clubs, when you go beyond 100 million, you're talking about a transformational superstar player. That's what you hope to be getting, right? And there's so many more risks to it. It's almost like a high risk, or they think of it as a high risk, high reward, because if the guy turns into Messi, oh, look, it's high reward. I'd pay 100 million for Messi. The problem is it's high risk, and I'm not sure how often it is high reward. Mm. So, and the other thing is there's sometimes risks that are far beyond your control. It could be injuries. I'll give you an interesting example, right? Or interesting to me. Kylian Mbappe. You know, again, on my rating from 1 to 5, where 3 means he lived up to expectations, you do it again. 4 means he surpassed expectations. So Kylian Mbappe, I went with the transfer mark numbers. You know, we can massage them a little bit because there's bonuses and whatever. But 180 million, second most expensive player of all time after Neymar. I gave that a 4. And I gave that a 4 because he's come, he's played really well, he's retained his value. His stardom has grown, I think, maybe even faster than Paris Saint-Germain had expected. But here's the rub. Paris Saint-Germain nearly lost him for nothing. If he had signed for Real Madrid, I would have given that deal a 2. Because after 4 years, you, other than 3 years or 4 years, I guess, of 5 years of him up, you've got nothing to show with it. You don't have a Champions League. You, if anything, you've got the idea that you have one of the greatest future stars in world football, current and future stars, and you lose him for nothing. And so there's people don't evaluate this. And again, we can get into Gareth Bale more. People say, oh, but he had the injuries in the club and the media were mean to him. I'm like, yeah, but that's what happened. And he signed that big contract. But these are things that happen. And some of these things are beyond your control. So I'm not saying that you should never go and spend a ton of money. But I look at, you know, which players I gave a 5 out of 5 for their deals. And the only ones are Buffon, and that was an insane deal back then, but obviously played for the club for nearly 20 years and obviously paid off. Manuel Neuer, again, 10 years and counting, tremendous captain, tremendous servant. Cristiano Ronaldo to Real Madrid. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that.
Nope.
I gave five out of five to Zidane to Real Madrid. Maybe it should be four now.
Maybe
with
it
hindsight.
Should be four.
I factored
too.
In the fact that if Zidane then never moves to Real Madrid, he never becomes Real Madrid manager. And obviously he won those Champions League titles and was very important. Maybe that shouldn't factor into it. But, you know, there's a lot of patterns here that we're going to get into on the Gab and Jules podcast. All right, Jules, let's dive into this a little bit more. One thing I should point out is I only looked at players who had been at their team at least 2 years. So
yeah.
This excludes, for example, Romelu Lukaku, because obviously it's only been one season. There's one thing that jumped out at me is I look at defenders, right? So in my top 10, you have Kyle Walker, John Stones, Benjamin Mondi, Aymeric Laporte, and Ruben Dias. You've got five Manchester City defenders. And, okay, Mendy obviously gets one out of five, not anything, for many reasons.
Yeah.
But the others, I all gave them three out of five. And again, three means you lived up to your price. People are saying, Kyle Walker's been exceptional. I mean, yeah, Kyle Walker was the most expensive right back, I think still is the most expensive right back in the world.
Yeah.
And I was skeptical. I thought they overpaid for Kyle Walker, given his age as well. But no, it was... You hit it out of the park, 100%. But you can't say he far surpassed expectations.
No, there was a lot of mistakes made as well.
It is interesting, though, and I wonder, Ruben Dias, I gave 4 out of 5 because he was player of the season in his first year straight away. And I think that is fair to say that surpassed expectations.
Yeah, completely.
But it's interesting with defenders. Is there a knack for it? Is there a lesson here that if you're 100% on your guy, then throw the money at him and he'll perform? Or are defenders helped if you have a good coach because ultimately they move into a structure?
Yeah.
And they're easier to integrate into a structure.
I think it's maybe easier to settle in if you're a goalkeeper or a defender, especially in the top team. And I think what helps massively is if you play alongside top players as well. You know, I think, I don't know, we can debate the reason why Harry Maguire is top of your list with 1 out of 5, which is...
Who's top of my list is the most expensive.
Yeah. Right. So he's the most expensive defenders and in the history of the game, and he has a 1 out of 5 rating, which I completely agree with you. So he's top of your list. And I think if you look at the reasons why you gave him 1 out of 5, is one, because he's not very good. Two, because the team around him was a circus. Three, because I don't think he's got the mindset to be able to deal with such a price tag, so much expectations. And I think the mindset is a key on a lot of those players. The ones who didn't do well or who have a very low ratings, Tanguy Ndombele. Again, I don't think he has the mindset to be a world-class player and to justify the amount of money that Spurs have paid for him. Naby Keita, I'm not convinced either. And I think you go down the route of mentally, the one who usually do the best, especially on a lot of money and things like that, are the strongest, are the one with that drive, are the one with that ambition. Again, Kepa, I don't think Kepa mentally is capable of coping with the kind of expectations and pressure that top clubs, world-class players have. You know, and you go back to Buffon earlier that you mentioned, or Neuer, I think they're so strong, like, you know, in that kind of ambition and drive that I think he also sets them apart from other goalkeepers or other players.
I also considered the price, how much you're paying for somebody. I have a friend who's in the world of hedge funds, and one of the things they specialize in is, you know, buying distressed assets or undervalued assets. And he said, there's no bad asset, there's only bad pricing. So it's a question of assessing the risk, right? So Harry Maguire is 26 years old, and he cost 87 million. And again, I'm not picking on Maguire, right? And he cost 87 million euros, right? He was the most expensive player in the world. Had Harry Maguire come for 40 million euros at 26, maybe he wouldn't be 1 out of 5. His performances would be exactly the same, because he had a tremendous season. He had a season where he played a lot.
Yeah.
And then he had a horrendous season this year and issues with the fans. Maybe he'd be 2 out of 5. Maybe he would be closer to that kind of break-even mark. And for me, when you what's also interesting about this list is, at least as far as the defenders are concerned, is there's a pattern here. Other than Van Dijk and Walker, the players who cost a lot of money and who lived up to the expectations are all younger players. You know, De Ligt, I gave him 3 out of 5. And the reason I gave him 3 out of 5 is that he hasn't been phenomenal. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been bad either. But he's still 22 years old, right?
Yeah.
And you spent a ton of money on him. So that means that you can either sell him, get a big chunk of that money back, or you get him and he grows and so on. So obviously he needs to perform better. But so far, you could say, you know, he's on track. When you arrive at 19, same thing for João Félix, right? When you arrive at 19, you're going to be patient. Now with João Félix, I say this is not a deal you do again, because 3 years later, I don't know how far he's progressed.
Yeah, you haven't seen any improvement.
And you spent 127 million on him, or whatever it is.
Yeah. I find your list fascinating, and I think we can go through every player, and everybody at home will do the same, and we go and say, oh, I would have given 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. The thing that I find it hard to incorporate almost is the injuries, because Lucas Hernandez, he's a good defender, a really good defender. He's a World Cup winner. And the injuries, to some extent, were not his fault. And I think to have your time at a club, especially after a club invested so much money on you, like it is for Lucas, 80 million euros is a lot of money. It was the release clause. It's either you pay, you don't pay it. Bayern paid it. But for even himself to be hampered by injuries that injuries that can happen to anyone. Yeah. Maybe there's things he could do better and more to avoid the injuries. But still, it's the bit where no one can control, really, to a certain extent.
But that's why you have to be cold-hearted on this. It's not... If I give Lucas Hernandez 2 out of 5, it doesn't mean that Lucas Hernandez is a bad person or he's been lazy or whatever. It just means, most likely, they don't do this deal again if they know that he's going to be injured. For, you know, it's all by the benefit of hindsight, right?
Yeah,
it doesn't mean that it wasn't the right deal at the time, although for me, you know, 80 million euros at that age, I think way too much money
for an
undersized center back, you know, who played left back, obviously, for France. So to me, it's pretty binary there, right? In the end, we look back and you have to consider the injuries. Gareth Bale is the one which, you know, I got so much pushback.
Did you? Because more than Pogba. Pogba, you were mean to him. 1 out of 5, you mean.
How?
Why? At least 2 out of 5. Two out of five is fair.
1 out of 5 means you... I think if he had extended his contract, he might have had 2 out of 5, but they got zero. They're getting zero. They're losing him for nothing.
That's why he got... Yeah, but
I mean, there's no...
Yeah, but the only issue I have with that, and I agreed with you for Kylian to a certain extent, but this is not Paul Pogba's fault. So you give him a lower mark or grade, whatever it's called, for something that is not his fault, for almost a mismanagement from Manchester United.
I'm not giving him the grade. I'm giving the deal the grade.
True, but right? it's still, you know, under his name, and he shows that he was not.
That's
really...
why I think people need to be grown up about it.
When it comes to Gareth Bale, I think we are.
It's the same thing, right? People are like, oh look, but he scored the Champions League, blah blah blah. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. He was at the club for 9 years. Well, 8 years, because one of those years they literally had to pay him money to go away, to go play somewhere else. He missed an enormous amount of starts in that time.
Yeah.
They gave him an enormous contract, which he didn't live up to. And he left on a free. And he was the most expensive player in the world at the time signed him.
That's true.
I mean, I don't see how, if you ask them, like, whoa, Real Madrid, would you do this deal again? I don't think they would. And you could say, oh, Baladesima and stuff like that. Yeah, I know, but... It's not, and then this is the thing we run into, right? It's not like if Gareth Bale, if instead of spending all the money, which is something like 350 million over the life of his time there, if instead of spending that money on Gareth Bale, they had spent it on other people, maybe they would have won stuff anyway. Maybe they would have won more.
You don't know. They might not have without him.
But that's what you always look at. Look, I'm not saying it's easy.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's more deals
that
go wrong. Then go right. The difference, I think, and this is what we as fans often forget, is when you make a mistake on a 10 million euro, when you're a top club, because obviously 10 million euros for some clubs is a ton, for others it's very little. You make a mistake on a 10 million euro player, it has a different impact than if you make a mistake on a 100 million
Completely.
Euro player.
Completely.
And I think there's two reasons, and looking at the forwards list, I think it becomes very evident. There's two things that we see that I think lead to bad decisions. One is situations, and like Barcelona dominate this list, right? Griezmann, Coutinho, Dembele.
Yeah.
You see a lot of reactive signings, right? Oh, we lost Neymar. We're sitting on a big pile of cash. Let's get Coutinho. Let's, you know, let's Dembele, whatever, right? That's obviously not good business practice.
Not the way to do it, no.
And part of it is you're hampered because people know you have a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I think that's when you got to show some intestinal fortitude and say, we think this player is worth this much. If we don't get it, we'll walk away and spend our money elsewhere.
Yeah, I think it's, you're completely right on that. We discussed it at length before when those deals happened, that even outside the money, they didn't really make sense, to be fair. And I think it was not just a bad judgment in terms of how much we're ready to pay and being bullied into paying those kind of amounts, because that's what they were bullied. But also the fact that how you almost misunderstand what your team needs at that point. Okay, you lose Neymar, who is who played on that left-hand side with Suarez and Messi. And instead of going to get Coutinho and Dembele, who don't play like that. I mean, there were so many other players they could have gone for less money that could have been far more successful than those two.
Or maybe you get apart. Maybe you get six or seven of them,
exactly,
for the amount of money you spent on it. And maybe, you know, a couple of them far exceed expectations, a couple of them live up to them, and a couple of them underachieve, but you're still better off.
Yeah, completely. I mean, there's also... So you talk about Barcelona and how bad some of the deals they've made. I mean, Manchester United are the other club in here that have, I think, the lowest grade for their players. And then Atletico Madrid, which is an interesting one because the two that they have, well, certainly I think the two that they have in this list are Thomas Lemar, big failure for 72 million euros, and obviously João Félix that we mentioned. The thing with Lemar, and we go back to the injuries, and Lemar agreed obviously to go to Atletico. He could have said, no, I don't think this is for me, because they play in such a style that I don't see myself ever adapting to this team. Right. And then we're going to go back to structure that you mentioned a bit earlier. For Lemar to think, I can go to Atletico with that price tag, with that much money invested on me, and be a success, I find it really, really hard to believe that anyone around him or even himself thought, do you know what? I see that, I know the way they play. I can see it. And I can thrive in this environment, and I can become an amazing player and justify all that money. I find really hard to believe.
Yeah. And there you get into another factor, which is when we start mentioning deals involving Monaco and Atletico Madrid.
That's
and
right.
Certain people, you know, then you always kind of wonder about these vast amounts of money moving around. And I'll just leave it at that. But it certainly didn't help him. Remember, Lemar was linked with Liverpool as well.
And I think Arsenal too, right? He was very close to Arsenal.
And those clubs didn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And it would be fascinating to know why. Obviously, they may have been justified. I don't know. There's a parallel universe. I think Lemar would have been a very good fit at Arsenal, actually.
Yeah,
probably more so
I
than
think
Liverpool.
So too.
And you have to take these things into account, I think, as well. The other thing which happens all the time is clubs fall in love with players.
But by club, you mean what? Managers or sporting director or chairman,
sporting directors
owner?
And coaches. It does my head in about, like, you know, coaches coming out saying, oh, I wanted this player. They didn't get me the guy I wanted. And coaches going to the sporting director going to the CEO saying, we have to get so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. Not, to me, great sporting directors understand that, like, almost every player on this list, with the exception of Cristiano Messi, these are fungible players, right? If I don't have him, I get somebody else.
Yeah.
Right? There's a moment when you walk away.
Yeah.
And yet, it's like, and maybe because they're ultimately playing with other people's money, they take these gambles and they convince themselves that the player is essential and the player is necessary. And because we don't have transparency in football, I'll go to somebody who we're going to talk about later on the show who's not on this list. Romelu Lukaku. Chelsea had a Champions League winning manager, Thomas Tuchel. An experienced Champions League winning manager. He decides to make Lukaku one of the highest paid center forwards in the world last year.
Well, it's not really Tuchel.
Well, that's the thing. Who is it?
Marina
Granovskaya and Peter Cech fall in love with Romelu Lukaku and think it's a good idea to spend this. And what does Tuchel say? Yeah, let's go with this.
Yeah, but Tuchel doesn't say give him £250,000 a week.
No, but I think to some degree, I mean, I don't know for a fact that Tuchel is involved with salary conversations. I think he definitely should be, because when you're running a club, yeah, you say, maybe. We have a finite amount of money. If we pay this guy this much, we can't pay these other guys. Who do you want to put? Where do you want to put the chips? It's, you know, there's a saying that, like, you know, kind of victory has as many, sometimes victory has many mothers, and defeat is an orphan. You know, nobody wants to claim responsibility for these things, right? The Pogba deal, which didn't work out, right? It's nobody's fault. Mourinho, right? No. You know, we don't know. Nobody did this.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know. Or rather, we just blame Ed Woodward, because Ed Woodward, of course, gets blamed for
everything.
For everything, yeah.
Pretty much. I do think that there's, and again, you know, you need to look into all of those deals, but in terms of the structure that some of those players walk into our club, which they can adapt quickly, especially if it's a good one, or they can just sink completely and almost disappear when it either doesn't fit them or is not really made for them. And Lukaku, in a way, I understand everything that you said before. He also arrived in a team and in a system and a manager that didn't actually, I think, didn't help him enough to fit in, really fit in. And I think there's a lot of players in your list, but again, it's not so much the goalkeepers and the defenders, but more in midfield and the forwards, who, if the structure around was messy or just not up to the task, where they struggled. And again, your grades are perfect, but a lot of it could also be down to those players walking in into a system already put together that didn't really fit them. And then we go back to the point that you just made earlier. Why would you sign some of those players at times where a lot of people could see that they would not fit in?
Yeah, that's, I mean, and I'm thinking Coutinho is a great example of
completely.
This. Again, just don't want to just pick on him, but there's a whole bunch of people, Lamar, who we've mentioned. I think sometimes you also have situations where, you know, you overspend because you want to win something, right? Because you have a window of opportunity that's closing and you see this guy's a last piece. I don't want to say last piece of the puzzle necessarily, because he might not fit, but he had so much quality, and so we're going to roll the dice on this. And Cristiano Ronaldo going to Juventus, I think, would fit into it. I ended up giving it 3 out of 5. I don't know, to be honest, it maybe might be closer to 2 in the sense they might normally know now I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
But then I look at Eden Hazard, and he's moved to Real Madrid, yeah. 150 million, and he had a year left on his contract, because this isn't reflected on here. And, you know, he's 28 years old at the time. Honestly, what would Hazard have needed to do? You know, stay fit, score 20 goals and 20 assists every season? To live up to that price and those wages at that age?
Yeah, completely.
So
we go back, but Real Madrid, there's also James Rodriguez on that list for midfielders.
And that is a perfect example of the emotional decision.
World Cup 2014, that incredible goal, that tournament as a whole, and then you bring into your team, and he's had some good games. It's just not, and he's a very talented boy. There's no problem. We can debate the work ethic and all those kind of things, and go back to the mindset that we mentioned at the start of the segment about the drive and the ambition. But that was never going to work. It was never going to work. And for 75 million euros in a team that you have already the boss in Cristiano Ronaldo, where everything has to go through, this was just... you're Florentino Perez, you watch television, you say, oh yeah, I need James in my team. But it's more complicated than that.
I think there's some stuff about it, because again, I know Florentino can make emotional decisions sometimes, but I know that's the popular narrative, that he watched it on TV, saw Colombia at the World Cup and fell in love.
Yeah.
I want to give Florentino, I can be critical of Florentino, I am often critical, but I want to give more credit from that. I think there's still some stuff that we don't know about this team.
Yeah, maybe.
That has to come out, because it just made so little sense at the time. But, that brings us to an end. I think I want to keep doing this. I'm going to do this every year.
I think you're very good at it.
See for trends, you know. It's easy stuff. And feel free to debate. But listen, if you want to disagree on these, that's fine. But please disagree on the criteria. Not like, oh, how can you give Kevin De Bruyne a 4 out of 5 when he's the best midfielder in the world? He's the most expensive in the world.
Yeah.
4 out of 5 means he surpassed those expectations. Manchester City won a league title without him, and, you know, another one practically without him. Like, you know, it doesn't mean you get 5 out of 5 and go into a, you know, Ronaldo at Real Madrid situation. Anyway, that's all for another time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, enough bloviating. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gav.
Florentino Perez spoke to El Chiringuito and said, referring to Kylian Mbappe, presumably, that Real Madrid will always be interested
here
in players who understand that nobody is bigger than the club.
Here we go.
Jules, does he know something we don't?
Here we go. Well, I've been telling you all along that this deal will happen in 2 years, 1 year, 3 years, whatever it takes. It will happen all this. Like, he will never, ever play for this club. You know, he betrayed us.
Can we get conspiratorial and suggest that there's a hidden secret release clause in there that becomes active after the World Cup and after the circus leaves town?
It might be, or it might just be that there's already some sort of agreement, gentleman agreement, even between the two clubs. I don't know. I just know that Kylian Mbappe will play for Real Madrid one day. I don't know how long it will take him to get there, but he will. I understand they were upset, and in that interview, Perez said, you know, he wanted to achieve his dreams and then he changed his mind. 15, we had everything sorted. This is not the Kylian that I wanted, that kind of stuff. But he also said a lot of things that show that I think at some point he will sign him. And I think he knows it. I think he knows it. Also in the interview, Gab, Florentino said that the Super League is not dead. Is he talking about July 11th?
July 11th. Mark the date in your calendars. Yeah. That's when the European courts are going to decide whether UEFA are abusing their power as and in a monopolistic way and violating competition law by the fact that they are both regulator in the sense that they make the rules for the pyramid in the game, but also competition organizer in the sense that they organize the Champions League. Essentially, what this does, if the courts find in favor of Real Madrid, Barcelona, Juventus, it would mean that they could go and play their own competitions and organize their own competitions, like, say, the Super League, without any kind of penalty or sanction from UEFA. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think the courts are going to recognize that football and the pyramid, there's a concept called the specificity of sport, that all of this, you can't treat this like another business.
Yeah.
But I genuinely don't know, because courts are lawyers. Lawyers are unpredictable, right?
Yeah, we know what you think of lawyers as well.
Exactly. Yves Bissouma is on the verge of a £25 million move to Tottenham Hotspur. Jules, he had a year left in his contract. Yeah. Is this a good deal?
I think it is a good deal. You can argue that with a 1 year left, £25 million is, you know, is big money.
26 years old, though.
Yeah.
You've got 5, 6, 7 years left.
Easily.
And he's a really good player.
He's a really good player. I think he will improve Spurs. I think well done to them for signing someone like him. Between Højbjerg, Bentancur and Bissouma, I don't even want to talk about Winks and Skip and all
the
of
little
that
Iniesta?
Guy. Yeah.
Skip got a new contract. Have
but this
respect.
Is good. This is good to play Champions League. It's good to play in the league. I don't know if they will rotate, if Højbjerg will have to make room for Bentancur and Bissouma. But Bissouma brings a lot of the things that they need as well. I mean, if I was Tanguy Ndombele, I'd be really worried right now. Ooh. But he's did. I mean, there's obviously a case, you know, privately around Bissouma. I don't know what the outcome of that will be.
What we can say about it is that he was arrested.
Yeah.
He's being investigated for a sexual assault in a nightclub. The investigation's still ongoing. He hasn't been charged yet.
No.
I would assume 1,000% that if you're Tottenham, you have done your homework on this.
I would think
and
so.
And you say, okay, we're very confident that he's not going to be charged and that, you know, this doesn't follow a pattern. It's not reflective of him or whatever. We don't know.
No, exactly.
But if you didn't do your homework, well, then you're stupid.
And just quickly for the Arsenal fans who are not happy that he's going to Spurs because they thought it could be a good value for Arsenal, this is not the midfielder, the profile of a midfielder they're looking right now. So don't feel like you're missing out on someone where they're targeting different profiles of midfielders.
What is that? So they don't want to... But they want
to... I think with Partey and Lokonga, they already have players in similar profile, which is true.
And also, you
are not clear on the fact that Partey's older and gets injured.
Yeah, true.
And then Lokonga is very young.
Yeah, but he's there. If you sign Bissouma, I mean, you can't sign a million midfielders either to start with.
Well, no, now that you extended El Nani, who you were going to get rid of. But whatever, let's not go there.
Meanwhile, Gab, Inter's pursuit of Romelu Lukaku continues, and the clubs are talking. But why does this deal has to get done by the end of June?
So the reason that this deal has to get done is Romelu Lukaku, obviously, being at Inter, there was tax legislation in Italy, which essentially, it's meant for captains of industry and high-profile people, essentially means that you can get a really good deal on your taxes. Essentially, half your income essentially is tax-free.
Wow.
So what that means was, because Inter cannot afford to pay him anywhere near what he's on right now at Chelsea, so the idea was that it would be that he would cut his salary by a certain amount, and then on top of that, Inter would get this tax benefit, which means that they could afford to sign him. He would be costing, he would be taking a 30% pay cut, but it would be costing Inter a lot less than what he cost Chelsea.
Yeah.
So that's the idea. The thing is, this has to be done by June 30th because it's under the old residency regime. Latest news is that Chelsea are open to a deal, but you know, Chelsea want to get some money back because of the amortization of his fee, which is a lot.
That's true.
Inter have apparently offered 5 million euros. Chelsea are thinking more along the lines of 15. Will they meet in the middle? I don't know. Seems like a lot of money. And I also still go back to the point. If I'm Chelsea, I ask Tuchel, like, are you sure? If this guy leaves, we can't necessarily go and get you another center forward. Otherwise, it's Armando Broja next year. You sure you're okay with this, Tommy?
Yeah.
I'm not sure he is. Jules, I hate to bring this up, but France lost at home to Croatia. They have just 2 points from 4 Nations League games. Deschamps has a lot of capital in the bank, but are folks asking questions? Because they darn sure should be.
Yeah, they are. They should be. We are as well. It was bad. It was a bad game overall. Deschamps was bad, really bad in the team selection, in the system they played in, the tactics. How can you be 1-0 down at home and still play 4-5-1 out position is beyond me, completely beyond me. He got his substitutions wrong. He got everything wrong, basically. I know it was a tough time for him because obviously he's lost his father halfway through or at the start of this international break. He said at the end he took responsibility, to be fair to him. Said that he didn't have the energy, the players didn't have the energy. It was really tough. I don't know how much you read into it, but certainly it's a bit worrying the fact that they only scored 3 goals in 4 games, that they really look out of it completely, and that is still not really sure how to play, with what system, with what players. Before the 2018 World Cup, it was not much better, which reassures me a little bit because it was a bit of a mess 5 months before the 2018 World Cup and they ended up winning it.
It was a bit of a mess at the 2018 World Cup, but just that they're good at defending and they play with centre backs at full.
If they do the same again in 2022, that's fine with me. I'm starting to be a bit worried now. Germany destroyed Italy 5-2, and it could have been more, to be fair. Gab, that late goal for Italy avoided this being the Azzurri's worst ever defeat to the Germans. You want to praise Hansi Flick's team or more despair about Roberto Mancini's crew?
I will choose to praise Hansi Flick's team because I am not despairing about Mancini's crew.
No, like, I think you're right.
It's not like, oh, let's assess the team ahead of the World Cup, because guess what? We ain't going to the World Cup.
You're not.
Right? We gotta take a longer term view here. So he played a bunch of the kids against. We saw Nyonto, we saw Fratesi.
Yeah.
The guys who were there didn't play well. Nobody, even you know, some of the veterans who were in there, like Barella or whatever, but you know, Germany played well. I think what we're seeing is and we found out the Timo Werner can actually score goals.
What you said the last show?
Look, I think we're at the stage, and this applies to all of them, we're seeing a lot of random weirdo results because players are tired, managers are doing different things, they're mixing things up. We shouldn't read too much into it. Although, Jules, it could be worse.
It could.
You could be England. You could be losing at home to Hungary 4-0. Look, If we're gonna give France and Italy the benefit of the doubt, we got to give Southgate the benefit of the doubt as well. He says he should get the blame, not the players. Mm-hmm. But is he now the English guy? Are you 100% ready to go there?
100%. I don't want to say his name anymore. I've had enough. Had enough at the World Cup. Had enough at the Euros. I don't rate him, as you know. I like him as a guy, as a person. I don't think he's at this level in terms of managing and management. What we saw against Hungary, but not just Hungary, and I know it was difficult for a lot of countries, but what we saw in the previous games was just not good enough from him. It was just not good enough from him. In the setup, again, yes, the players are tired, but some of the calls that he made made no sense. Some of the system, the formation, the tactics made no sense. I think if the crowd at Wolves, and you don't go often to play England matches at Wolves, and if even they turn on you, it's clearly, I think, the problem is deeper.
Those are some pretty hardcore fans, and they're angry.
They're angry, you know, and I think it goes deeper than just saying, oh, but, you know, it's tough to play 4 games in 10 days at the end of the season like this, which I agree to. But I just don't think it's good enough what we've seen. This is maybe the most talented squad England have ever had with 66. I think even better than 86 or 90. I think this
I would have said 2006 was...
But I think 2006 was talented but very unbalanced. I think this one can have balance, can have pretty much everything.
I don't get this messing around with a 4-3-3 and like, we had this conversation where Robbo says Walker has to play in a back three and Walker goes and mops up and that way you get Alexander-Arnold in the team. Simple as. No, Alexander-Arnold doesn't defend, so what do I do? Oh, but at left back, let me keep playing right backs at left back.
That's crazy.
This whole thing. And also, Calvin Phillips, what's his excuse? What, he's tired too? He's tired after he's been sitting on his backside
like
half the season?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, why do you play a formation where you have to cram most players in where you're weakest and have, other than Declan Rice and maybe Jude Bellingham one day, although certainly not against, I don't know.
No,
not good. Move
they
on.
They might still win the World Cup and, you know, I hope they have a really good
the
time.
The talent's there. He's got to figure it out.
He's got to figure it out. Australia beat Peru on penalty kicks in the first Inter-Confederation playoffs by substitute keeper Andrew Redmayne, who grabbed the headlines, Gab.
So my first thing I got to say about this game is, yes, I knew we were going there with Redmayne. This is evidence why the World Cup had to be moved. Even at night, it was so hot.
But why did they play that game there?
Well, because you got to get used out of the stadium. You got to start testing things out. And
it was like 100 degrees.
But whatever. I thought it was actually pretty evenly matched. I don't think Australia are a great team. And even in the penalties, there were mistakes from both that got through. But yeah, the story's going to be Redmayne. He comes on for Matt Ryan, actually a couple minutes towards the end of injury time, which I thought incidentally was weird because you knew he was going to give a lot of minutes of injury time. Why not wait until, like, you know, if you say you don't want to send him in there cold, fine, wait until 30 seconds or something. But whatever. It just struck me as weird. Redmayne's got like the giant beard, whatever, and he's dancing around. Some people said, oh, look, I don't like that because it's not ethical. No, it's fine. He can do what he wants within the rules. He looks stupid.
I'm not sure he even troubled the penalty takers.
I think that narrative moved away. I think it was the penalty takers who made mistakes. Costa Rica, though, became the last team to qualify for the World Cup as an early goal from Joel Campbell. Remember him? Gives them a 1-0 win over New Zealand in the other playoffs. Jules, the all-whites weren't happy with VAR, though.
Yeah, they thought some harsh calls were made against them. I mean, I thought, again, it was quite a level game, I thought. There was not much in it like the Australia-Peru game. Maybe, again, the heat. And they also complained about having to play that game in Qatar, which I think they have a point. I'm happy for Joel Campbell.
Where do they want to play the game? What, in Wellington? Like,
I don't know, but it looked like the heat took a lot of...
This is hot for the Costa Rican players.
Yeah, no, I know, but it's hard for everyone. I'm just not saying that, you know, it would have been better for New Zealand or Costa Rica, but it's just, you know, I'm happy for Keylor Navas, Brian Ruiz, who came on at halftime, who's still involved. It's pretty, that generation that did so well in 2014 is still very much there, so well done to them. L'Equipe Gab reports that UEFA are looking at the possibility of a 4-team pre-season tournament to be played in the US before the Champions League gets underway, so at some point in August. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I would be clear, not this August, but in future years.
From 24-25 season.
The idea is they want to monetize and maximize the UEFA brand and, you know, do it in the States rather than having them go and play in preseason tours in the US. We go and we do this. We have this little mini tournament. In the end, UEFA is responding to clubs who want more money. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're floating there. As you can see, though, if you're CONCACAF, if you agree to this, because it is on their territory, and they do have a right to go and decide. Jules, you reported on Wednesday on ESPN.com that Mauricio Pochettino has been sacked, and we're just waiting on the announcement.
That's right, Gab. Goodbye, Poch. I mean, it was not very good until he lasted. He had to stop at some point because it was just not good enough. And then we still don't know who's going to replace him. So let's also wait to find out if it's Galtier or Zidane or someone else.
Or Allegri.
Oh, Allegri, no, yeah, maybe. Allegri. Not so sure about that one. Meanwhile, multiple outlets are saying that Paul Pogba's return to Juventus has been finalized and he's all done. Gab, is there where he regains his mojo?
I think so. I think he seems motivated. I think he was comfortable in Turin. He's going to be there with Allegri. He definitely makes the team better. And again,
he's, 4 years. He's 30 in March. 4 years.
It's a big commitment. But, you know, it's still within Juve's parameters. It still makes sense. Yeah. I'm okay with it. Speaking of Pogba, his new documentary is out on Friday on Amazon Prime. And I thought this was a joke, but apparently it really is called the Pogmentary.
That's right, yeah. It's his idea.
I'd love to meet these marketing people.
It's his idea, that.
It's his idea. Yeah. All right, then much respect. Call it whatever you want. It's call it brand. George if you like. I bet you're excited, Jules. We did get some insight, though, on that extension that Manchester United offered him.
Yeah, that's true, Gab. I'm excited. It's a five-part like mini-series, if you want, where you really dive into, I mean, if you're interested, you don't have to watch it, but into his life, his private life.
You know how much criticism he's going to get from people for doing this?
Probably, yeah. The wife, the kids, the mum, the brothers, all of that is in it. It talks with Mino and Rafaela, his two agents, into as well. He mentioned the offer that United make and the absence of a second offer too. He's not going to say who he signs for in the documentary. I've seen most of it. But it's a good, I think it's a good take into how the process and, you know, the discussions that he has. I think you see a lot of Rafael Pimienta in it, who is very important to him and to the whole, you know, to the whole process. So, yeah, I find it interesting.
What was interesting to me was we find out that Manchester United, the new contract that they offered him, basically was the same as the old one. There was no raise involved.
That's right.
And the conversation, and again, obviously the cameras are there, but the conversation, so they know the cameras are there, but I don't think you necessarily are going to necessarily have this conversation knowing we're going to release a documentary in the future, is more that, well, if they value me, why are they offering me the same amount as before? I find it interesting from United's perspective, but from Mino's perspective too, that this is how you feel. Like, you know, because my attitude, we talked about it earlier, is, I'm sorry, Paul. You've been here. We love you. You're very talented. But you've been injured. You've been rubbish.
Yep.
There's no reason to give you a raise.
Yep.
And I think that's the right attitude from United.
I agree too.
So I'm actually Team United on this one, much as I love Pogba.
Yeah. No, I can understand that completely. And sticking with United, Gab, Christian Eriksen has been linked to them. Does that make sense to you? Obviously a free agent.
No, it doesn't make sense. I don't.
Why not?
It's okay. This is my thinking, right? I know Christian Eriksen's come back, done very well for Brentford. But if you're Eriksen, you said your dream is to play in the World Cup.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, especially given why you are in this situation, what you want most is stress-free, no drama, play at a high level, and get ready for the World Cup. And then we see after the World Cup, but already, you know, you're going to be, you know, you're not a kid anymore, right?
But going to Manchester United.
What?
Why can't you get that United?
Because it's a freaking zoo. Because you got a new manager. Because you got Bruno Fernandes playing in a similar position, or maybe it's a 4-3-3 in your midfield. There's just a different level of pressure on you. I don't.
True.
Maybe it's what he wants. Maybe it's what he craves. I don't know.
But there's Champions League football. There's Erik ten Hag.
Yeah. There's a lot of games, and your goal is the World Cup. You told us that.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's not forget
Erik ten Hag. What is he? Is his dad like?
But he invited him to play with Ajax, to train with Ajax when he was coming back from after the accident.
Yeah. Good. Nice so for him. A lot really of people invited him. He trained in Switzerland too.
No,
so
I know.
He's going to sign for Chiasso.
It's not like someone that he's never met before or never trained with, for example.
Hey, Eriksen obviously was at Ajax. That was a long time ago. I think I don't even know where ten Hag was.
No, he wasn't there then, but he was there before he moved to Brentford back in September when
he
trained for them.
But then also from the United perspective, right? You got a long-term project. Is Eriksen going to be part of any kind of long-term?
30 now? Yeah, no. I hear you.
You know, if you're going to rebuild. And why create this potential Eriksen, Bruno what we should be talking about is they're going to play 4-3-3, I presume, right?
Because that's
what
I think so.
Right? Where does Bruno fit in a 4-3-3?
I think he can play as an eight. He will have to change a bit his game. But
can you play with Bruno and Eriksen as your eights? And what? And Fred going
I mean, Eriksen is not there
them?
Yet. So
I don't know.
But for me, the most is yeah, you need a really, really good holding midfielder to play 4-3-3 the way Ten Hag wants to. And right now, they don't have it.
McTominay.
Who?
Exactly. Dani Alves is leaving Barcelona again.
Oh.
Jules, I can't help but feel that given his teeny tiny wages, he might have been helpful just to hang out for another...
And suddenly he wanted to stay, but instead, it's okay. They gave an extension to Sergio Roberto, who, again, I should not mention his name. Certainly not in the same sentence as with Dani Alves. He wanted to stay. I think he was sad not to be given an extension on, like you said, the minimum wage, pretty much. I don't know, is it because he didn't give you what you wanted in the last 6 months? I don't know. I because you already have Sergio Dest and Sergio Roberto and Azpilicueta, I think would probably come now if Dani Alves leaves. I'm not really sure.
If they can ever sign these players, because that's the other issue.
Exactly. Speaking of Barcelona, Gab, it's a big day today because they will vote on whether to sell 49.9% of the licensing and merchandising company and 25% of future TV rights to CVC.
Well, no, not to CVC.
Not to CVC.
Because he came out and he said, well, no, we don't want the CVC deal, but we've got other solutions.
I thought it was the CVC deal, but so they've got someone else like CVC.
They had CVC on the table, but he's saying he's not going to join the CVC deal. Wow. He's going to do a private deal. At least that was a speculation. I don't know. Yeah. And this is what makes me really, really uneasy, right? So this isn't a vote by all the Barcelona members. It's a vote by sort of an exalted, I guess, premium tier representative clubs or whatever. Hey, there's about 4,000 odd people who have the right to vote. But as we've seen in the past, like, which I think I always find is very weird for a club like Barcelona, but only a small minority of those people actually show up to vote.
Yeah, we said that before.
And ultimately, these people aren't necessarily going to be experts. So they're going to have to trust Laporta that they're going to weigh up the pros and cons here. With a TV deal, it's always risky because you're saying, like, we'll take money now in exchange for future income. Well, 25, if my TV deal now is 100, but in a few years could be 1,000, and I give up 25% of that.
Exactly.
It's not a great deal. No. The 49.9% of their licensing and merchandising company as well. You know, you can raise a couple hundred million, sure. But then what? You know, is this all to go and try to have more flexibility with the spending cap? Because again, as of right now, they can't sign Kessie and Christensen, who they've already signed as free agents. Or indeed, I don't even think they can extend Sergio Roberto's contract.
So
they have to sort that out somehow. I don't know. It feels to me like mortgaging the future. You need some really smart people in a room giving an opinion on this and whether this is right or wrong. And this is the problem. You got to put a lot of faith in.
And this is really short term. But do you think they've got any other option than just think short term because of the situation financially that they're in?
Personally, unless this deal is really good. And again, I'm not an expert in this, but you know, guess what? Neither is Laporta. He's got to go and trust experts. And what we realize with experts is you find one expert, he says one thing, and another expert says the other thing. It seems to me like it's a gamble. Honestly, what I would do is I would hunker down. I would say, we got into the top four last year. Pedri and Gavi, those guys only get better. If we need to sell De Jong, let's sell De Jong. But otherwise, let's operate on this four to one ratio, right? Sacrifice De Jong if we have to. Sacrifice Memphis my love for Memphis.
Yeah.
And understand, we're in a big hole, and let's get out of this hole slowly. And we've already shown by putting faith in the kids, we can finish top four, we can maybe be a little bit competitive. It might take a couple years, but that's better than mortgaging our future.
Yeah, definitely.
Christopher Nkunku is set to sign a new contract at Leipzig rather than move this summer. Jules, he'd be silly not to insert a release clause, right?
Yeah, you're right. And that's exactly what they're doing. There will be a release clause.
How much?
I think they're talking about it now between 60 and 70, up to 75 million euros. I think this is the ballpark, is the bracket, and it will still only be 25. And I think there will be clubs who are ready to pay that kind of money anyway. He's had an incredible season. And I think also what he was quite worry about was the World Cup coming, obviously. And I think you stay at Leipzig, you're still the big boss of that team. You and Tedesco have a great relationship. You arrive at the World Cup, you'll be part of the front squad, and you would think, with great momentum and dynamic. If you move now to go to...
You got
to
resettle and so
exactly.
on.
Yeah, big club, no. You don't know how much you're going to play between now and November. It might be a bit difficult. So I think this is clearly the best
choice. If he gets that release clause, he's played this really well.
I think it will be. Oh my God, I bet you love this guy because Benfica have released the details of Darwin Núñez's 75 million euro transfer fee to Liverpool, his former club, Almeria, will get 10 million euros. Peñarol in Uruguay, where he started out his career, will get 3 million euros. And 7.5 million euros will go to agents and intermediaries. This is the transparency that you always want.
I love. Obrigado, Benfica. No, it's because Benfica are listed in the stock market, so they have to be transparent about this. A lot of these other clubs are not transparent about it. And why are they not transparent? You know, people say, it's none of your business. No. It is the business of the fans.
Yeah.
The reason they're not transparent, other clubs, is because directors of football, coaches, people like that, they don't want to be held to account. They don't want to be held to account. Anyway, whatever. It's interesting. I mean, the 7.5 million, which goes on agents and intermediaries, this is 7.5 million from the Benfica end.
Yeah.
So out of the 75 million that they get, Liverpool presumably will be paying Darwin Núñez's agent
to
sign his contract. And also, often you assume there's a buying agent who represented Liverpool in the deal. That people can say, is it a lot? Is it a little? It's the cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
We've had this conversation when we had Giovanni Bianchini on and so on about regulation. If it's transparent, I don't have a problem. Go ahead, pay him $100 million if you like, if it's transparent. Thankfully, Benfica are transparent. A lot of others aren't.
No, that's true.
Dean Henderson has reportedly agreed personal terms with Nottingham Forest, and he could be joining them on loan with a £20 million option to buy. This makes sense for Manchester United and for Henderson?
Well, I mean, we can start the debate. You know, would he be better than De Gea in goal? Certainly be more proactive, I think. But what's the point of keeping him if he's never going to play? You may as well, if he, especially as we understand, he's desperate to leave and desperate to play. He wants to play in the Premier League. This is a good opportunity for him. Send him on loan with that option to buy. And then 20 million, I think, for someone who you've had now on your books for 3 or 4 years.
Well, and his contract's going to... I think he's only going to have a year left at that size.
So I think it does make sense. Did he deserve to have a chance for United more than what he's had so far? Probably, I think so.
Forest current keeper pretty good? He's going to leave Samba or whatever his name is?
Yeah, I don't think he is. I think he's pretty good. Yeah, he played in France before. Obviously, he's French.
Right.
And Marseille didn't really get a chance. But yeah, Le Havre, who are really good for goalkeepers, the academy. Yeah,
and for Pogba.
Decent, yeah, Pogba and many others. Marca are reporting that Vinicius has verbally agreed a contract extension through 2026, Gab, with a €1 billion release clause. He was out of contract in 2024, Gab, so that was necessary.
It's necessary, it's deserved. He had a really good season.
You reward
obviously,
him.
Obviously, at Real Madrid, they've got tiers. He's moved up to a higher tier in terms of wages. I think it's a good deal. The extension could be 26 or 27. They're going to kind of decide in June. He didn't want a longer deal, which I can also suggest that from his perspective, he's taking care of himself. He's being smart.
Yeah.
The release clause, I always have to laugh.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's going to pay €1 billion for Vinicius, okay? Relax. Nobody's ever paid more than $180 million for anybody except for Neymar. That was a release clause. And I think hindsight, we know that was a mistake. These release clauses are essentially nonsense. It's a weird Spanish thing.
Yeah.
We in the media shouldn't focus on release clauses because they're stupid.
Complain.
Sao Paulo forward Marquinhos is on his way to Arsenal for just $4 million, but Wolves aren't happy about it. What are the Gunners getting for their money?
They're getting a really good talent at 19 years of age, who is a very skillful, quick winger with a lot of pace and a lot of dribbling abilities, that kind of stuff, which I think is something that, you know, I think Saka is really good at, obviously, dribbling and one-on-one situation, but I think they can do with Marquinhos, let him grow.
Especially if they're going to sell Saka shortly, since he's not going to sign his new deal.
Don't start winding me up.
Saka's going to City.
All his life. B, I know you will stay all your life. Don't listen to him. And for that amount of money, a bit like the Martinelli deal a few years ago, then you take it. And I think Edu wants the Arsenal name to be there in Brazil, to be out there for those young talents to want to come to Europe and want to go to Arsenal to be the go-to. So it makes a lot of sense for them.
They still need a center forward, right?
They do.
Osimhen?
I would love Osimhen at Arsenal in the Premier League, that's for sure. Real Madrid have put a €35 million price tag on Marco Asensio, who is 26 and is 1 year away from being a free agent, Gab. But at the same time, they're also open to offering him a new deal. So what's going on then here? Either you want to keep him or you want to sell him.
Or you want to hedge your bets. I think a lot of it is actually down to Asensio, right? So he's saying, okay, what do I want to do? You know, well, if I stick around, he knows that obviously you've got Rodrigo there, and so, you know, somebody's going to be coming in.
Yeah, Hazard as well,
and Hazard
comes back to fitness.
But he's played well, and I think Real Madrid equally are saying, like, look, we're willing to gamble on keeping you for a year, and then losing on a free transfer because your boy Mbappe is not coming.
Yeah.
So we need you around. I think at that price and at that age, I think he can do a job for a lot of clubs. I think Asensio is a really good player who was on the brink of superstardom. Then he had that injury. And then this year...
He lacks consistency, though. He does.
I also think, though, the way Real Madrid played this year, he's not a counter-attacker. Doesn't necessarily suit him.
No, true.
Suit him. I think in the right club, he can go... You know, for this money. We're talking 35 million here, right?
Yeah, but the amortization is done now already on when they bought him. So...
It's done. Your boy, Mohamed Ali Cho, has joined Real Sociedad. Jules, how excited should they be? You talked them up last time. And what is their attack going to look like now that the only living Sorloth in captivity is heading back to his cage in Leipzig?
I think they should be excited.
Isaac Cho, pretty good, yeah?
He's really, really talented. Not so sure about the graphic to announce him with the gloves. Obviously, for the
Mohamed Ali. Mohamed Ali, huh?
Yeah, I'm not really sure that worked, but contract until 2027. He's young, he's hungry, he's super talented, super quick. I think La Liga fits his style of play. I don't know if you play him and Isak up front in a two, or if he's the sort of number two option after Isak. And for Sorloth, we can't really say that, you know, his time in Spain worked out for him. It felt more like captivity than anything else, to be fair. So, Major League Soccer, I've signed a 10-year, $2.5 billion deal with Apple TV. Gab, is this a game changer? Could other leagues follow?
It's interesting because I don't, you know, having... Well, certainly we've never had this long a deal with a domestic... streaming service, which is ultimately what Apple TV is.
And this is globally for the whole world. So MLS games would be, you'd be able to see them on Apple TV wherever you live. This is for the whole world.
So compared to the current deal, which I believe obviously was part of the USSF deal, you know, they've about tripled it, their annual revenue, just because they don't make very much. The previous deal, the domestic deal, was 90 million odd, but that included the U.S. national team as well. And it didn't include overseas rights, but overseas rights. I mean, I think they're lucky if they get a bag of chips. So it's a lot of money. I think they still want to do linear deals. They still want to get stuff out there because one of the risks is, you know, not everybody has Apple TV.
Yeah,
not everybody wants to spend whatever it costs a month. And obviously Apple TV has no necessarily experience in terms of streaming sports, which, as we've learned, as DAZN can tell us, sometimes technologically it's not that easy, or Amazon as well, right?
Yeah.
There are glitches, it's difficult. But they're a partner with Deep Pockets, and I think MLS needs it. And I tell you what, other leagues will be looking at this, and I'm kind of wondering about this.
Yeah, I agree.
It's been a while since we had an update on Botman.
That's true. That's true, and it seems like he's coming to the Premier League, but maybe not to the club. I mean, it's not, maybe not to the club.
Every day, hear something different. Oh, now Milan don't need him because Kalulu and Tomori were so good, and Simon Kjaer's coming back, and Gabbia's there, right? And the next day is, oh, no, he's going to the Premier League. Oh, no, Milan are back.
Because
he doesn't want to go to Newcastle. Oh, he does want. He'd rather go to Milan. Oh, because
Bob, well, because you know,
he's reading Marco van Basten's book about he wants to blow dry his hair. What's the deal here?
I think he would want to play Champions League football ideally, but clearly, I mean, he's tempted to go to Newcastle as well.
He played Champions League football next year. How much fun did he have doing that? Come on, man. Like, we're talking about Botman like he's freaking Beckenbauer.
Yeah, he's really good. He's a really good left-footed centre-back, by the way. Okay. You don't have many out there. I mean,
I just ask you this question. I don't want to turn Botman into...
I think he's between Milan and Newcastle for sure, and Newcastle seems to be the favorite.
This is what I don't understand about this guy. Sometimes, just the way the media works, I don't know if he has an agent.
He has.
Who's extremely friendly and talks to everybody continuously. But I rarely remember a transfer or a transfer link that's gone on for so long, right? What is it, like 8 months now?
It's just the hype. The hype is big.
No, but there's only two teams. It's always been Milan, Newcastle. Newcastle, Milan. And those two are very different. They're clubs in different situations,
sure. That's for
different
sure.
leagues and so on. And I'm like, does nobody else like Botman? Is it just these two? What is he?
I think considering his age, again, that he's left-footed, that he's on the market for, I think it's a decent price for him. You know, if you
get why doesn't he sign for Paris Saint-Germain? You guys need central defenders,
it's
right?
That's a good question, actually. Yeah, because we already have Kimpembe as left-footer.
The problem is maybe Luis Campos didn't leave good memories in
Maybe as well. La Liga boss Javier Tebas, as promised, has filed a formal complaint with the UEFA, regarding Manchester City and PSG not respecting financial fair play rules. What does this mean?
It doesn't mean anything. It just means that he said he was going to do it. He was angry over the Mbappe deal. He's pointed this out about, you know, sovereign wealth funds, essentially countries sort of continually pumping money into clubs and changing the market and there not being enough oversight. I think he's 100% right, and I'm glad he's doing it. And for all the criticism that you can put at Tebas, he has brought a level of transparency and accountability to La Liga, right? I hate it when people have, you know, say, like, oh, let's make rules. And like, oh, but I'm like an exception with you. No. He's made rules. He hasn't been afraid of clashing with Real Madrid, with Barcelona. Yeah. And I think deep down, Real Madrid respect the fact that he has the rules, right?
Yeah.
And but that said, you know, what do you want UEFA to do right now? There's nothing they can do. Absolutely nothing. I mean, these changes have to come from higher up.
They've hired a French lawyer called Juan Branco, who is a bit of a... Well, he thinks he's a bit of a celebrity in Paris, in this, you know, in this world. And he says, like, we're going to go all guns blazing at them. We're going to get them, you know. And all those words, like, okay, let's see then. But he seems to be really believing that this can lead to something.
I'm not going to say all lawyers, but 90-95% of them, you can get them to do whatever you want, right? You just pay them enough money. Vincent Kompany to Burnley's official. Jules, I was skeptical, but I guess I was wrong.
Were you skeptical about him going or actually him being good fit for that?
No, about him going. About
I
him
just
choosing
thought he
Burnley.
Wanted to, he could not rent out his place in the Northwest, so he thought, hey, hang on, I need to come back. I don't know. It was really mixed reviews at Anderlecht for what he did in a weak league, let's be honest here, with, I think, quite a good academy and a good squad overall. I don't know what to expect from him at Burnley. I don't think this is an easy job at all. I think the Championship is a hell of a league. No, I'm not saying it's level on par with the Premier League, but it's a tough, tough league with a lot of matches, the playoffs at the end as well, in a season that, well, yeah, they're going to have a big break during the World Cup, but still, I don't think it's easy.
I think he was going to buy the club.
This one not going well at all, you know.
Why doesn't he just buy the club? And then name himself as manager and chairman.
He doesn't want to repay that £50 million loan. Gav, Inter have signed 20-year-old playmaker Christian Aslani from Empoli. And I know you're a big, big fan.
Yes. Guess what? I like midfielders who can pass and playmake. And for one, I like the fact that Inter aren't signing another, you know, gaggle of Vidals and Sanchez's and people and Ashley Young people in their 30s.
Yep.
Look, this is a guy who has an upside. It's 14 million euros, 4 million now, obligation to buy for 10 million last year, which that's why are they doing it this way? Well, they're doing it this way because they don't have cash and this is a way to kick things down the road, right? He's going to be an alternative to Brozovic, which I think they really, really need.
Yeah.
And he looks like a promising player. This is how you need to think.
Exactly. Well done, Inter.
Jose, it goes from bad to worse for Bordeaux. They were relegated from Ligue 1, but they won't be playing in Ligue 2 either. They're sinking deeper than that.
No, that's right, Gab. They're going to play at the moment. They've appealed to the decision, but in the third division in National 1 because they went in front of the DNCG, as you know, the sort of French financial fair play regulator, if you want. Let's call it that way to make it simple. And the financial situation is dire, really dire. Even with the money they're going to get for going down, with the new CVC deal as well, they're going to get 8 million this summer and 8 million euros the following one as well. But even that's not enough. Even with selling players like Wong or, you know, others, even the money for Adli, it's just not enough. So Gerard Lopez, the owner, is in big, big trouble, especially with the people who actually own the club, really, who are King Street and Fortress, you know, similar to Elliott, basically, in Milan, who are the creditors of the club, who basically want their money back. And right now, if they don't get their money back, then I think the club could even go bust, let alone play in the third division. So it's really, really difficult time for the club. They're trying to get a deal where the money that they will get from the Tchouaméni deal, for example, because they get a 10% value of that transfer coming in. Right now, this is going to the creditors. It's not going to the club. And I think if they can reach a deal with King Street to get that money in the club, in the bank account of the club straight away, that might just about save them. But King Street will have to agree to that.
It's hard to have a lot of sympathy for King Street in particular in this deal, to be honest.
It is, to be fair. Nemanja Matic is reunited with Jose Mourinho for the third time, Gab. His move to Roma is official.
Yeah, and look, I
was surprised.
When it was a multi-year deal, blah, 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 I didn't like it. It's 1 year plus an option for a second. And you know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
To worry about a little bit, the hype in Rome has been like, oh my God, it's like people haven't watched Manchester United play the last couple of years.
They don't really can't run anymore.
I don't. They seem to be to believe he's going straight in. Can you use him? Could he be? Could he play sweeper like in the back three? Let's take it easy. Let's take Matic. He's motivated.
That's good.
He won't have to look at Ralf Rangnick every day.
Yeah.
Which you know, I think
he appreciates.
I think he would appreciate. So see where it goes. The Premier League released their rounds of fixtures today, in fact, which, as you know, I care zero about this because I'm pretty sure that everybody will play everybody else twice.
Will they,
home and away. But what I think is interesting is they got rid of that round of games in between Boxing Day and New Year's Day this year because the World Cup in Qatar finishes, on like the 18th or something
finally
like that?
Finally the 18th.
So this is just common sense, right?
It is completely. It makes a lot of sense. What I find amazing is that all the other leagues will actually now have a similar schedule through the festive period, like the Premier League always had. So in France and in the other leagues, you play on the 20th of December, which before used to be usually is holidays. You play on January the 1st, which has never been done before, ever in France. So for all those European fans who say, like, oh, we love Boxing Day and the festive period in England, why can't we have the same? Here we go. We're going to have the same. I'm not sure even that is good for the players, but I don't think there was another option. There was no other choice.
I think this year there is no other choice because of the thing. And going forward, we've had this conversation before. We've been slammed by people on social media for it, but I think we both agree is the outcome is crappy games with tired players. And people still watch and people, oh, look, I make a mistake. And like people enjoy it. I don't.
True. Yeah, that's true. My boy Arsene Wenger has angered force in South America with his comments on player development. Amongst other things, he said that if Kylian Mbappe had been born in Cameroon, he would not be the player that he is today because basically there's development in Europe and then there's development in the rest of the world, which nowhere near as good. Which, obviously, in South America, they had a lot to say about that.
Yeah, so CONMEBOL got really angry about
Really angry.
I'm a little bit with Arsene Wenger on this when you look at the broader picture, right? So Arsene Wenger, he's a technical director of FIFA now. He's been beating this drum, and Gianni Infantino. They've made the point that said, look, top players come from all over the world, but the money all flows towards Europe. The talent all flows towards Europe. We want to change that, right? In the Club World Cup. You can be cynical about it and say they're doing it because they want money, and whatever, fine. But right, but they're saying, like, we want the rest of the world to grow, to become like Europe. And Wenger was talking about how the fact that super talented players in Africa, you know, they don't necessarily have the facilities. And so a lot of them right now, because of the money as well, they come to Europe at a young age and develop there. Why CONMEBOL gets involved when he's talking about Africa and not about South America, I think it's simply because right now, the guy who runs CONMEBOL hates Gianni Infantino, hates FIFA, and by extension, Arsene Wenger.
Wenger, he said the rest of the world. I know he said Cameroon and Africa for Kylian, but he said the rest of the world. So I guess if you come aboard, you thought, okay, maybe he means Africa and us as well.
Yeah, but you know, without being mean about it, you could also look at Vinicius and Rodrigo. And, you know, there are a lot of Brazilian players, a lot of people from Brazil, especially, but also from Argentina, who come over at a very young age. And, you know, his point is, can we keep these guys there longer? Can we develop them longer there? That way, if they are sold, they bring more money back and so on. I don't think Wenger's being evil here, but maybe he could have chosen his words a little bit better. Andreas Pereira will be returning to Manchester United after Flamengo did not pick up his options. Jules, there's no reason whatsoever for me to mention him in quick hits, other than the fact that I just realized he joined the club 10 years ago.
Yeah.
How did he keep getting new contracts? Wait, this is he like United's Lucas Piazon?
Exactly, yeah. Although he played a little bit with United, he had a few spells, not much, not well either. I think maybe they thought he was talented, certainly when he was young, you know, a young player, and he went through, and they thought maybe there's something, and always that fear of if we let him go on a free and then he shines somewhere else, we will look like idiots. Okay, maybe
they managed to do that on their own, largely
exactly without even, you know, Andres Pereira. The thing was, he played really well for Flamengo. To the point that we had a story a few weeks ago, if you remember, from, I think, Rob Dawson, that, you know, United players, United scout went to a Flamengo game to watch someone else, and then thought that the start of that game was Pereira. So they almost forgot about him and then realized, okay, the guy is still good. Flamengo didn't want the deal. It was clearly too high, too much money they were asking for the option to buy. So he's coming back, but to do what?
Maybe Erik ten Hag likes him. I mean, if I'm Ten Hag,
another loan, and then.
But if I'm Ten Hag, I haven't come to training camp. I assess him. I keep an open mind about him.
But don't you think we would know now if he was good enough, really, for that kind of level?
To be honest, look at United's midfielders. Right, Matic and Pogba are gone. They literally have two bodies right now,
yeah.
Plus Van de Beek. I don't know if there's somebody I'm forgetting, right?
But no. But yeah, you're right. They lost Matic.
I don't know if Garner's
Matic.
Coming back, right?
Yeah.
But Ten Hag is going to have a training camp in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And he's going to have McTominay.
Yeah, why not?
He's going to have Fred. He's going to have maybe Garner and Van de Beek. Why not have Andre Pereira there too?
Yeah, I guess.
And
so.
Find out if he can play, at least as a placeholder, while you bring in other signings.
Yeah, yeah, that's
maybe
true.
He can play.
Yeah,
who knows?
That's true. Igor Denisov, the former captain of Russia, has had harsh words for the war in Ukraine, Gab. He says he could be killed or imprisoned as a result. This is a brave move.
It's a really brave move, and this is a major public figure in Russia. I mean, I said, this is a captain for the national team, played for them for 10-odd years. I think he's really, you know, I don't know of too many other public figures, certainly from sports, certainly, you know, if you're a hockey fan, if you want to see Ovechkin criticize the invasion of Ukraine, you'll be holding your breath for a long time. I think it's brave of him to come out and speak.
Great.
I don't know how much attention he's going to get in Russia, because, you know, sometimes opposing voices sometimes seem to get suppressed over there.
Yes, completely.
Botafogo invaded the training ground and threatened players as Oglorioso facing relegation.
Yeah.
Jules, it's stuff like this that makes me think that there's more pressure in some countries than others.
Completely, yeah. This is the kind of scenes that, and this look quite... It looked quite violent. It reminded
not quite
me,
sporting, not to that level. They didn't get beaten up, but it's pretty nasty.
Yeah, similar to what we saw in Marseille only a year and a half
that's
ago,
right, yeah.
Where they stormed the training ground and broke pretty much everything in it. It's the kind of scenes that we are more used to in Italy or in France, not so much in England, for example, where instead you go to, you know, Ed Woodward's house and you just like threaten him that way. But this is crazy. This is the passion of ultras as well. I think you take the good and sometimes you have to deal with the bad as well. We don't agree with that kind of violence, of course, but the situation is really tricky, really, really tricky for them.
There's so much pressure in these situations, and, you know, people always talk about, well, in the Premier League, the pressure, like, you know what? Like, we both talk to a lot of Premier League players all the time, and obviously there's the pressure you put on yourself and whatever, but... Nobody in the Premier League has the pressure of like my safety at work and my family, you know, different situation.
Yeah, completely. Ben Foster has left Watford on bad terms, Gab, and it's over his YouTube activity.
Yes, Scott Duxbury, the Watford chief executive, came out with a letter. I thought it was really interesting. Well, he also had a go at Roy Hodgson, because on the last day of the season against Crystal Palace or whatever, Watford got relegated. He says that, you know, he went and he like, you know, waved goodbye Crystal Palace fans because they're... Obviously, he's got a strong tie to the club.
He had a big smile on his
face.
But
to Watford, I don't know. But Ben Foster is interesting because during lockdown, Ben Foster decided to start his YouTube channel. And like, I don't know if you've ever met the guy. He's one of those ex-pros who's personable, who speaks well, he's entertaining, he's intelligent.
You know, I went on holidays with him, so, you know, he's a good guy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you and Ben Foster went to Mallorca together. Yeah.
Not Mallorca, but somewhere else. Yeah, we had a great time.
So then you know that he's into his YouTube and he started, the cycling goalkeeper, right? Now the issue that Walford took issue with was he got so into YouTube that he was, you know, filming at the training ground, wearing a body cam during matches and stuff.
Microphone during matches, yeah.
Yeah, which kind of overstayed. They told him to stop doing it and he just continued. Much as I like Ben Foster, I love creativity.
Yeah.
I can totally see Watford's position.
Under contract? Yeah.
You're under contract. Yeah. They're saying, though, because at the same time, they also said, like, well, we're going to put more restrictions in all the new contracts we sign, which makes you think that it might have been a gray area whether he was allowed to do it or not.
Yeah.
But, like, and I think ultimately, and maybe I'm being cynical here, but I think club saying, like, oh, well, if he can do it and monetize it, so can we. Jules, how excited were you to turn up? In fact, the show turns up on Manchester City's official Erling Haaland signing reaction video.
It was awesome, Gab, to be fair. A lot of the people who follow us on social media spotted it as well.
And it wasn't just us, to be
fair. It wasn't just us. There's a lot of people. It's how the world reacted to the news. So there's a lot of shows and all around the world and languages where the video shows all of that. And there's us. It's quite brief, yeah, to be fair, but still, it's better to be in than not in.
Exactly. Like Jan Åge Fjørtoft, who's not in there. Exactly. Probably because, you know, Erling Haaland, they want to make him feel bad.
Exactly.
That he's beating his record.
And as City mentioned to me when I said thank you for having the Gab and Jules show there, I said only the best for us.
So
thank you, Man City. When Marco van Basten speaks, Gab, people listen and we listen. And he says in the new book that is coming out this week that he wouldn't put Messi or Cristiano in his top three. And he says Cristiano is a great player, but those who say he's better than Messi know nothing about football, or they are saying it in bad faith. This is a bit harsh, no?
I am a mere mortal. I cannot criticize Marco van Basten.
No,
although,
I can.
To be fair, if we want to go there, Marco van Basten as a player is one thing. Marco van Basten as a coach and perhaps an assessor of talent is another one. I'm not surprised with the top three. It's an age thing, right?
Yes, it's a generation. Yeah.
You're going to put Pelé, Maradona in there, and then
Cruyff's
Dutch is going to put Cruyff, right?
Yeah, of course.
Fine. I don't know that you need to go to the point, be so definitive. You know, you could just say, oh, they're different, but I prefer Messi. You know, this seems to me like bulletin board material for Cristiano. But, you know, the book has some interesting snippets.
Really? I mean, he talks a lot. He said that it's Andre Agassi's book that inspired him to do the same and talk a lot about his, you know, private life almost. He tells the story when he lost his best friend at 7 when he drowned on a ice lake because he fell through. He talked about the injuries, of course, the ankle and the treatment that he received that was hell. And he also talked about his experience at Milan. Of course, and especially the sort of culture clash or shock when he moved in there, and remembering him and Ruud Gullit arriving at training ground at Milanello, not really be on par with Italian players who were so dapper and nice shoes and belt and shirt and socks all matching. Where
they didn't have wash bags, they were carrying their gear like their toothbrushes in a plastic bag.
He said we look like tramps,
like vagrants.
But he also said that for the first time in his life, he saw players drying their hair after training, which they clearly didn't do in the Netherlands back then. But a lot of every time player, he said, took the hair dryer out. Come on, man.
Every Italian mother makes sure that if you go out, if you play sports, if you sweat, you don't go outside with wet hair. It's just common sense. That's how you get sick. Anyway, Jules, this brings us to an end. We're going to be back on Monday because the transfer market is getting a full swing.
Yes.
There's a ton of stuff going on, a ton of stuff to talk about. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.